nutrition.
Now, that's the other part, food security and nutrition. But it's not, yeah, I don't know.
What?
Do something for me right now and we'll keep this going.
It's 7 o'clock and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We broadcast from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. And I hope you're all listening.
Mm-hmm.
It's November.
It's Diabetes Awareness Month.
Remember when it used to be Movember?
Oh,
like,
well,
Movember is no more?
Well, too many people still have their beards or
and
mustaches.
Bother cut them off?
No. Anyway.
Well, like, you never hear about it anymore. Why not?
Well, I did at the beginning of the month, but I didn't participate this year. We can go back to when George Robbins used to come in and tell us all about this, and this month was very important. This month was important to George because he wanted to share the information about diabetes. What year was that? Do you remember? 1997, 1998?
That was a long, long time ago.
Oh, yeah, But I remember those.
Way, way back
I remember those days because George came as to be part of our Christmas bake-off.
He did, and he brought beans, three-bean salad.
That's right. And he took great pride in sharing that.
He felt,
Yeah, because we were...
And I mean, it wasn't the spring rolls. But, you know, it was good.
Mm-hmm. It was very good.
Like, is he listening?
I don't know. I put red onions in mine now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes you can take carrots and you do the...
you can do that. Yeah.
You make curls out of them.
You don't have to do what I say.
No.
Poverty.
By the way, julienne carrots are great, but go back to your article there. Getting nutritious food into remote communities is very expensive.
Yeah, too much money. High rates of poverty, low income contribute to a poor health outcome.
And that doesn't have to be remote communities. It could be anywhere.
You're right. Genetic susceptibility.
Yeah.
Genetic susceptibility.
So genetics, you have no control
over. That was like one of those seashore deals.
Yeah. Yes. But that's the same as with the heart care or heart disease.
While complex, there is a recognized genetic predisposition, sometimes referred to as... the thrifty gene.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That they call it the thrifty gene?
Yeah.
Remember, that's behind the closed doors thing.
Oh, okay.
You know, he's got the thrifty gene.
I'd never heard that.
He doesn't look thrifty.
Tell me more about it.
That may increase the risk that combined with modern lifestyle changes. Yeah. What else, Doug? Anything else? I don't think we need to say anything more.
No.
Just, watch your diet.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like sometimes you have a dozen donuts.
Well, stop.
And coffee.
A dozen is okay. Apples or oranges or bananas.
Donuts.
I
said donuts.
That's the word you don't want.
Apple donuts. Fritters.
Oh, my goodness.
There's some, fiber in there.
Did you not get this is awareness week for diabetes?
I'm joking.
Or even make them.
So anyways, what you want to do is cut back to like a half a dozen. Right? Is that how that works?
No. Cut back to...
zero? What's the donut shop going to do?
Well, I hate to tell you.
Anyways, all kidding aside, You should probably. And maybe you have that donut. You go out for like a 4-hour walk. Possibly 5.
4-hour walk.
Well, won't that burn it off?
I hope so, but...
Maybe 1 in the morning.
But it's the sugar that's in
your system. Like, I'm trying to work for these people and getting them a donut.
You know, I don't think you listened to our dietitian when she was talking to us during the month of September and October.
Oh, I listened.
She did talk a bit about the diets and so on. I will invite Sarah to come
Sarah
back.
Sarah can come back and tell us that a dozen
next
donuts
week,
is okay.
No.
No?
Yeah, they're okay as long as they're not in your kitchen, on your kitchen table, or being eaten by you. No, but there's a... We did do a piece on that. She talked about diabetes because Sarah is a specialist. She'll be jumping up and down. I'll bet you that phone will be ringing after you get off.
That'll be fine. She can call.
Oh, look out. No, she's a great person to have to talk. I will get Sarah to share something about diabetes next week. Okay?
Pancakes? What about pancakes? Pancakes are okay.
If you make the pancakes the way I do.
No.
No.
Like there's a pancake house?
Oh, you're kidding.
I used to go to.
Oh.
You know, if you go over...
You know what?
You go out there to
I'm thinking that you need somebody in your family to help you and guide you through this.
Oh, I don't eat that way.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm just saying...
Yeah?
If you do, maybe go out and run around the block several times.
Now, that's something that I got to figure out. There are calculators that would help you, like, literally a calculator that says, what's your body weight? And how fast are you traveling?
BMI.
Well, no, but how fast you're traveling and how much sugar did you take in? So I don't know. Do you look on labels to see how much sugar?
No.
No, okay.
I look at it. If it says fruity,
no, I forget.
I don't bother.
Oh.
There's a good chance that's not going to be good for me. Not fruit, just like the fruity, you know, cereal.
Right.
I'm trying hard not to say the names of the things.
Oh, you're going to be in a lot of trouble after
Why?
This one.
Like we can,
home
poke
alone
fun.
Today?
No. We can poke fun. There's a bit of levity there.
Yes, yeah.
But, you know.
It's a serious situation.
Folks out there can tell the difference.
Mm.
I would hope. Maybe not. I don't know. I don't know. The guy on the radio said I could have a dozen of donuts. What's the matter?
You got to be careful what you say. People do listen to you.
No, they don't.
You brought to mind a song that I would like to play. And it's not Don Ross's song, okay?
I think I know the one.
Sugar Wars.
Yeah, that's Don Ross.
Well, you'd have to look him up on your magic computer. No, the one I would like is the one that I hope a lot of people listen to and think about Diabetes Awareness Month and the whole how do I protect myself and my family with this. But it's called Wolves Don't Play by the Rules. And so if you're not going to play by the rules... then you could be in trouble. Oh, there's one just called Sugar, but there's one called Sugar Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that was a radio play.
Oh, maybe that was the name of the album.
I don't know, Doug.
Yeah, because Don Ross.
I'm almost certain this is the right one, but.
Yeah. Well, do you want to play that right
I'll
after?
I'll look it up.
Do you want to play that after?
Right now?
I'm going to.
Maybe we should. Being it's Diabetes Month or something like that. Awareness.
How about the wolves?
Okay, you play your one and then I'll play yours.
And you can tell us, is this...
Hey, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
Don Ross, mine will be better.
Ah, Willie Thrasher. Here's the war. That was Willie Thrasher and Wolves Don't Play by the Rules. And Sean, I'm thinking that, holy smokes, look at that. It's like 12 minutes after 7 already. You know, here we are. I think that the Wolves Don't Play by the Rules
I've heard
fits
that.
It, okay? So if you don't want to do it, then you're running on your own.
Okay.
Okay. You've got a song that
this
you mentioned.
This one's called Sugar, and I'm almost certain this is a part of a play,
okay,
radio play.
It's the music that goes with the radio play.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
It's like 30 years we've been doing this.
Oh, my goodness.
Maybe we'll miss a few things.
What?
Are they grading us at home?
Too many donuts.
I don't think
there,
so.
Sean.
Anyways, we'll play this one.
Wait a second. I went to a cafe, a lovely little bakery cafe, with you.
When?
Oh, when Sean opened his bakery cafe.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. It was like a coffee bistro, really. Coffee. But when I sat down, and you and I were going to do an interview there.
Said, Wolves don't play by the rules.
No, and I got to look up on the chalkboard, and I looked at said, that's not donuts and not pastries. And I mean, there were a few things. They made croissant and a croissant sandwich, but there were other items there that told me, like the soups that they were making and the plates and a lot of fish.
I thought was the coffee shop.
The coffee shop, yeah, okay. Not a bistro, eh?
But that was the day you came.
Yes.
Other days, lots of sweets.
Oh, maybe they knew I was coming. They're protecting
I don't think
so. Me. They were protecting me.
No, you wouldn't have been. Mm. Maybe you would. I don't know. I think he might have been.
Oh. Anyway.
If he was or not.
Okay, so tell me who you have.
So we have Don Ross, mm-hmm. and this is called Sugar Tune. I think this is one of the rare occasions where he does sing.
Oh.
It's been a number of years.
Yeah.
Since I've heard this, so.
Oh, is that right?
So I'm going to press play and be
surprised,
shocked and amazed as well, along with you people at home.
What year was that published?
Long, long time
Just
ago.
Just look down there further.
Months ago.
No, that was when it was uploaded.
I don't know. It doesn't say.
Doesn't?
Oh, wait. No, it doesn't say.
I think it was 1993.
Let's say.
Somewhere around there.
Let's say 93.
Because that was on a CD that we received here at CFRC when you and I started.
You look at it, it's like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that I remember the song.
We played it a number of times. See, you don't listen to your own show.
It's a great song, and I'm sure everyone out there will love it.
Okay.
Okay, go.
Yes.
Turn us up.
Turn you on. Go.
Sugar, when the newcomers came around, what's the good of sugar? It made
Well, there's Dawn Ross. How's that? Sugar?
Yes. Please.
No. How many sugar in your coffee?
I used to be a 2.
Okay, and now?
4.
What? Jeez.
No, I'm down to 1.
I'm gonna roll up this newspaper.
No, I'm down to 1.
I'm going after you.
Sometimes 1.5. Oh, that was.
Don Ross didn't want to stop, did he?
No.
Yeah.
Anyways,
okay.
No,
sorry.
I have gradually been
cutting back on
cutting
sugar.
It back down. Mm-hmm.
And you've upped the exercise. Uh-oh. Somebody's contacting you about this whole talk, right?
No, it's about an unrelated
thing. Oh, okay. Thing. All right. Good.
What was your question? Oh, how many?
No, the fact that you're...
How much sugar in my coffee?
Yeah.
How much coffee in my sugar? No, I'm kidding.
You're looking at it the wrong way here.
I am bringing it down.
Good. But you're also upping the activity that you do, the walking, the hiking trails. I am so impressed that you know that...
Not doing that anymore.
Oh, come on.
No, because...
You've done so much in the way of hiking.
It'll happen again in spring.
Right, when it gets
ready. Right now...
Mm-hmm.
No.
No.
There's reasons why. I won't tell you. I won't bore...
Christmas time, you're getting snowshoes.
Uh-huh. Maybe.
Oh.
It would be nice to get snow.
Yes, that
with,
too.
For which that... You know, the best time ever was the hill, and you could go down the hill on the
right.
back.
And then you have to walk
to
back
all
up.
The way back up.
That's where snowshoes with those claws help.
Is it?
Yeah. Perfect.
Anyways. Yeah. So, over there on the hill by the Fort Henry,
mm-hmm.
I tell this story every time I go to Fort Henry.
Oh, is that right?
Which is quite a bit more than I used to. Because, I don't know, they do things that are kind of neat over there. Anyways, I tell this story. I was like, oh, yeah, this is the hill right here. And back in the day, like we're like teens, and we went there the one year. I heard it on the radio, actually. Not this radio, a different radio.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, come on down here for bobsledding.
Ooh.
Yeah. And they had, this is when we used to get winter. And snow in the winter. We always get winter, but this is, you could go there, and they had the really cool ones with the steel runners.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they spent some time working on this hill, and they put water on it and made icy.
Yeah.
And you could get on these things and
fly down there.
Yeah, fly down. Mm-hmm. I was younger then, so I could walk up. I think I want one of those.
You want a bus.
Yeah, just
to take you back up
there. Mm-hmm. Get the Uber guy down there to just take me back up to the hill there. But anyways, no, you could go down there. They don't do that anymore.
No.
So I ask, has anybody else experienced that out there?
Downhill.
Downhill bobsledding over there at Fort Henry Hill?
I can tell you, I have never done that.
Finally, something
never.
You haven't done.
Yeah.
Finally, I have a story.
Oh. You always have good stories for me. It's always great.
Yeah. Anyways, that was my little story from a time.
I just want to remind folks that this is our funding drive month, 2 months, November 1st till December 31st. And we're getting there. I think that I believe they're up to 5,000 of the 25,000 that they're hoping to raise through this funding drive. So, yeah, it's kind of good. You know, 3 weeks in and we've got, $5,000 raised. That's a lot.
How many?
5,000.
Yes.
Of the 25 that is targeted for this year. So let's see how it goes.
You know what we need is a leaderboard.
A leaderboard?
A leaderboard.
Is that for downhill skiing?
No, it's the Jerry Lewis, Jerry's Kids.
Oh, right.
You know, he's like, what does the leaderboard say? Yeah, Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
And then there'd be like a drum roll. Mm-hmm. And
we'll design that for next week.
A leaderboard.
Yeah, a leaderboard concept, yeah.
Maybe we will.
We'll see. Actually, we're going to end the show today.
Is it time to go? Good.
No, it's not time
it
to
is.
Go. No,
I
not at all.
I think it is.
We have some music and we have some notes to give. But I mentioned that we're going to have talk about books, and you talked about the one that Jody Wilson-Raybould wrote.
Yeah.
And that you gave to me, and I read it. And it's she wrote that mostly for university students to become aware of what it's like to be involved in politics on both sides of the stand, the government side and the non-government side, whether it's First Nations community or municipal people or businesses who are trying to get in to get governments to work with them. So Jody Wilson-Raybould's book, what's it called? From Where I Stand, that's it. Yeah, that's the name of the book. And the whole title of it is From Where I Stand, Rebuilding Indigenous Nations for a Stronger Canada. And who published this book, do you know? That's funny. No, I don't have it.
Let me see.
The year published is all I have here. So anyway, so we're going to go to some promos. I'm not the only one. And after that, I have an author. So we'll introduce him in a few minutes. Ready?
Go.
Okay, so promos first.
Are you looking for a summer job? What about a career in engineering, computing, or technology fields? Queen's Career Service is excited to host in-person career fairs in Barlett Gym, Mitchell Hall, on Tuesday, January 20th for the Summer and Part-Time Opportunities Fair, and Wednesday, January 21st for the Engineering and Technology Fair. Drop in anytime between 10:30 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. at Barlett Gym. These events are open to all Queen's students of all years. Students are encouraged to sign up in My Career to receive event reminders.
Hello, this is Christina Laurie, CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative news reporter. Does local news matter to you? CFRC's annual funding drive campaign is now underway through December 31st, and you can help CFRC keep our listeners informed on issues that matter with modernized broadcasting equipment and trained team members. Help CFRC raise $25,000 this year and make your gift today via CFRC.ca. Don't forget to tune in for daily news programming and subscribe to our news podcast to keep up with the latest in your community.
My name is Stephen Brooks. I'm an emergency doctor and researcher in the Faculty of Health Sciences at Queen's University. Out-of-hospital cardiac arrest affects about 35,000 people across Canada every year. The sooner treatment begins, the higher the probability of recovery. Neighbors Saving Neighbors is a pilot program to improve survival for people who experience sudden cardiac arrest in Frontenac County. Let us teach you how to do CPR, use an AED, and become a lifesaver. Consider becoming a Neighbors Saving Neighbors volunteer.
Apply today at frontenacparamedics.ca.
Every day you hear something new on CFRC. Can you keep up? You need a weekly recap. Catch up with What's Climbing Friday mornings at 10. The charts on CFRC.
I have the real honor of being here with Rick Revelle. Actually, I'm at Rick's house, and Rick is the author of three books now. I Am Algonquin was the one that actually we had a lot of fun sharing here on CFRC, and the second one is Algonquin Spring, and that's out now and being used by students all over Canada. And Algonquin Sunset is the latest book that Rick's ready to talk about. So, Rick Revelle, welcome to Aboriginal Voices.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Doug, for having me, and I always enjoy coming here. And like But the people don't know that we've talked for an hour and a half before we even typed on the tape recorder. So that's what it's like when you and I get together. We share information.
And we have some fun. So we're talking about this literacy project, and the reason you and I are getting together is to share with people here at CFRC a little bit about being an author, getting language together, because you're writing about Aboriginal languages from across the Turtle Island, and then also doing a lot of research. So as an author, I want you to talk with them in mind about the young people who are going to try and research and write stories, but also for parents and grandparents who may pick up a book like your books and read to young people and their family, and young people being anybody younger than they are. Okay? And so a conversation about what's in the books, but you spend a lot of time researching them. Yeah. So let's start with the research first.
Well, my third book, I am very happy to say for Algonquin Sunset that I've been able to put the pronunciations in. And that's been like 5 or 6 years of in-depth research to get this right. For my first book, I could not do it because I could not find a talking dictionary or a book or a dictionary that would lay out the phonics of the pronunciation. For Algonquin Spring, I would have been able to do it, but only for one language, the Mi'kmaq language, and that's Joe Wilmot. Him and his group in Restigouche, Quebec, have this wonderful talking dictionary online, Mi'kmaq language, over 2,000 words. And I think I've told you this story before. When I sent out, for the second book, I was sending out the manuscript to elders for them to vet it and make sure, you know, I wasn't writing anything stupid or wrong. Because that's my biggest fear, is some native person saying, "Where'd you get that? I've never heard of that." So anyway, I got a lead, and I phoned Joe Wilmot and said, could I send you cut down a couple manuscripts? And he said, "Yes, of course." And I said, "I've been using the Mi'kmaq language, and I found this wonderful Mi'kmaq talking dictionary site, and it's pronounced by a young girl, an elder lady, and an elder man. And the pronunciations are so wonderful. I get the pronunciation, the ancient translation, and then I click on that word, and it goes to another page, and I play the pronunciations." And he says, "Yeah." He says, "You know that Joe guy?" I said, "Yeah, that guy." He said, "That's me." I said, "Uh-oh." Yeah. So I send him the manuscript, and, you know, it's full Mi'kmaq words. It comes back, and I only made one mistake. I used a Malisite word for a little person, and he gave me the proper word, and I'm like, "Oh, my God." It was like, big, heavy sigh. I'm done. For me, it's a success for me when I get it right. And I'm fervent in research because I'm so afraid of getting it wrong. So in my third book, I was able to... I've introduced the Lakota language. I've introduced the Anishinaabe language, also using the Amoene, the Algonquin language, and the Mi'kmaq, and I've been able to put pronunciations in. For the Anishinaabe language, the University of Minnesota has a college, it might be called King's College or Williams College or something, I don't know exactly what it, within the university, and they have this thing up in Canada, we call it Native Studies, they call it Indian Studies down there, and the students are responsible for the talking dictionary that's online. And I phoned them up and I thanked them profusely for looking after this, because it's immensely important to me. And it's a wonderful Anishinaabe talking dictionary line with pronunciations, and I get that, and I take the pronunciations off that. 95% of this new book, I have the pronunciations for. If I can't put the pronunciation in, I don't fake it. Mm-hmm. And in a couple of them, I would if I couldn't get the pronunciation, I'd have to listen to it online, and I'd listen to it, and I'd write it down, and I'd call my wife down, and I said, "Does that sound like what I've written down?" And so I'm really proud of the third book, that when a grandparent is reading to the child, or a high school student is reading it, they get the native word first, the pronunciation, and then the meaning. Mm-hmm. And it might seem like it's cluttered, but it's not. And I put it the first couple times, and the next time you might have to go look in the glossary for it. And everything's there. And it's like a big dictionary at the back and a dictionary in the front because you're learning. And for me, that's native literacy. These are dying languages, but they're being spoken. And all I want to do is get people talking about it. And they say, did you read Rick Revell's book? He's using, in the vernacular, he's using the Lakota words. Now, you don't open up my book and all you see is native writings. I use it for native names. I use it for animals and places. And you might go a couple pages and you won't see a native name. And then you might be on one page, you might see three of them. So it flows. If I can say it like that, yeah. I'm just very proud that I was able to put the pronunciations in, and use it. A guy down in South Dakota, his name is Robert Many Horses. I talked to him about legends, and I talked to Joe Wilmot about his language, and it's been fun doing it. I did that all in one breath. Did you just read that?
Yeah. No, you're talking about the actual language that you're putting into it and trying to keep that set. And the talking dictionaries, that may be something that people might like to do to extend their own learning after they finished reading your book. We're talking a little bit about Algonquin Sunset.
Yep.
That's the latest book. When does it come out?
Probably in about a year. I just sent it to my publisher last week. And in all these glossaries, there's websites where you can go to these talking dictionaries.
Okay, that's good.
People can go there and hear the words. Yes, I sent it to them. It was supposed to be in the 15th of May, so today's the 19th or 20th, and so they've had it. And it'll take at least a year of editing processes and designing the book cover. They did an excellent job in the first two book covers. I really love them, and I hope, you know, they do as good a job this time. I hope you're listening, Dundurn. And I still, there's four more manuscripts out that elders will get back to me, and then I'll add.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. Because you've done the manuscript, and so the writing process and the layout and how you want it by chapters and so on. And so it's gone to elders in different, for this last one, Algonquin Sunset, it takes place in more than just the area where we're sitting here in Kingston area. It goes out. So have you picked elders in different areas to respond?
I got a guy, Robert Many Horses in South Dakota. And they get the raw manuscripts. So when I have to include a letter with them, I say, don't go through there and try worry about correcting spelling mistakes or language mistakes. There's four more editing jobs is going to go. I just want you to get the basis of what's going on. Robert Many Horses, he lives on the Lower Brewery Reserve in South Dakota. He's a drug and alcohol worker. He's a real cool guy. Marty Ford, who's the superintendent of the Frontier School Board in Manitoba, largest school board in Canada. She corrects me on this geographically, and also the largest school board in Manitoba. Joe Wilmot from the Listigouche community and his daughter Silver. They read my books down in on the border of New Brunswick and Quebec with the Mi'kmaq community down there. I have a guy in Kingston, Robert Thibault. He's with Ocutones. He was the president of Ocutones. And then Annie Smith St. George's. She's a resident. She's the elder in resident for the Museum Man. Oh. And she, her husband read it. They've liked every one of my books, so really happy there. And then Willie Bruce, another Métis elder that lives in Montreal, and he's like a healer, knows about herbs and that. He always enjoys it. So that's who gets it. And I'm probably missing somebody there.
But that's quite a few. So
they're scattered all over the country.
That's right. So anyone who's going to be reading your books, I'm Algonquin, Algonquin Spring, or when the next one comes out a year from now, Algonquin Sunset, then people will be able to sit down and know that it's not just Rick Revell's book and his words and the way he put it together, but it's also Rick Revell's writing after doing all the research, and then it's been read by quite a few people. And that's a broad section of people. So then the next question is, what kind of feedback do you get from kids with your books?
It depends on the grade. I always love it. Carolyn DeGroote and you introduced me to this wonderful school, Perth Road Public School, and in grade five class. And the first time I went, the book, when my publishers came out with it, they said grade seven and up. And I'm going in this grade five, six class, and Mr. Groot had been reading the book to them, and they had so many questions. And afterwards, I said, I can't believe how they grasped this book. So then I go to a grade eight class, different questions whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I love the grade five. Like, they'll ask you all sorts of questions, like, you know, how'd they make this knife and that, and where'd you get your boots? You know? You know? And then, in elementary school, lots of questions. You go to high school, everybody sits there, very quiet. They love to be read to. That's what the teachers tell them. I've did quite a few high schools, and they don't ask very many questions. You'll get one extrovert there, he'll ask a few questions, but you just keep right on talking, because I don't know if they don't want to embarrass themselves in front of their peers or whatever. They're more inhibited than the elementary school kids. The elementary school kids, they'll all ask questions. Everybody's got their arms up. So I have great fun. In fact, I'm going on a canoe trip. I think it's June 6th with a teacher. She teaches Native Studies at QECVI, and I was there for her two classes, and she's bringing me on the canoe trip to tell stories.
So she's taking her old class?
She's taking her class at Gould Lake,
fantastic.
And she's invited me to go on the canoe trip with them. So, fine, I'll have a...
Oh, you can have fun with that out in the woods and talking. Any stories from the first two books would fit right in, except the ones in the snow. But that's good.
Or the battle scenes. We don't want to.
No,
We don't want to read any of those. She said, can you bring some native recipes? So I said, I tell you what, we don't have to go out and kill a moose or something. Which I wouldn't know too much about how to skin it or anything. That's my stepfather's era and grandfather. Here's the recipe for cedar tea and for pine tea. So which are both a little bit different, because one's about scooping the scum off and the other one's about stirring. So I gave her the recipe, and we'll probably have some tea. But I said, I don't put out forest fires, so we've got to make sure we're safe about these campfires.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. So you'll have a lot of fun with and those are high school students. You're going to
do those. Yes, I think they're grade 10. And this is the last year of QE, so.
So you're bringing us back around to the literacy aspect that we're trying to share with listeners here in our literacy project at CFRC. You wrote the books, so you don't have to read the books to them, because you already know the stories that you have. But you're taking some literacy and you're bringing it as storytelling. So for parents or grandparents, aunts and uncles getting involved with high school age students, elementary school students, after reading a book, discussing it, and giving time to think about it, then doing something like you're saying is possibly the best way to feel like you've been in the book.
Yeah, or do some research. Guys that I know that haven't read books before, they're hunters and they read my book, they love it. I have a friend that he has a brother-in-law that lives in Nova Scotia. He's a fisherman. He's only read two books in his life, my first book and my second book.
Oh, wow.
And soon to be my third book. He's amazed at it because he feels like he's right out in the woods. And I never was a hunter, but I went out with my stepfather hunting, fishing, so I remember all these wonderful things that happened. We ate lots of wild meat when I was a child. But that's all part of the literacy. And when they're done, they can research it. Mm-hmm. They can go and they can the stories. I've woven two very interesting true stories in Algonquin Sunset. One was the Crow Creek Massacre that happened in 1320, and I've woven in, I gave my postulation about what probably happened, but that's just what I think might have happened, and without going into it. And the other one was about the famous artifacts found in Beardmore, Ontario, which are now at the ROM, and in storage because when they found them in the 1930s, they thought it was the real thing, and they put it on display. And then somebody said, "No, it's not the real thing. It was a Viking axe, a Viking sword, and a Viking shield." So I've written that in my third book about how it probably got there. So and then they can and that's a, and so they can do some research, and that's part of literacy. Is okay, he says this is true. Let me read more about this. Let me be interested in this. And the same with the native languages. I put the websites in the glossaries. Go listen to them. If you only learn one word, like and first word that I ever learned, and it always sticks into me because it just rolls off the tongue, was deer in the Amawani language, Wawashkishi. And I just love the way that flows. Mm-hmm. And that's, a lot of people think that I can speak all these languages. I said, no, I'm 64 years old. I'm having trouble retaining a lot of the stuff I have now. But it sure is fun researching them and hoping that people get something out of that. And literacy is many things. And I think one is appreciating who came before you and reading about them, because you never know where you're going unless you know where you came from. I bought a 26 volume set of the Old West from Time Life, and I'm devouring them, and it's amazing about all the stuff that I didn't know about that happened in the history. There's just all the individual stories, and that's what, and I go online and research these things and think, oh my goodness, this really happened. So that's what I hope to put in my book. That whenever I talk about the natives hunting or these battles, the final battle in my third book takes place in the exact same spot that a battle will take place 400 years later between the same two combatants in the same spot. So do a little research.
Rick Revelle, thank you very much for being part of the Aboriginal Voices Literacy Project, and I really appreciate your enthusiasm, and I hope people get a lot out of this.
Well, thank you very much for having me on again. I always enjoy talking with you, Doug, and someday we'll just turn the tape recorder on and do 5 hours worth of monologue between the two of us.
It'll be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Good.
Kimmy Wetch.
Against the wall, I'm holding my head up so I don't fall. No, it ain't too late, we ain't too far gone, 'cause there's more love than hate, and there's more right than wrong. So won't you sit right here beside me and rest your weary head, and let those sleeping dogs lie in someone else's bed. Putting the fight down, taking the high road out of town, taking my mind off, taking my mind off the fighting side, walking away, walking the line. No, it ain't too late, we ain't too far gone, 'cause there's more love than hate, and there's more right than wrong. So won't you sit right here beside me and rest your weary head, and let those sleeping dogs lie in someone else's bed. Someone else's bed.
and let those sleeping dogs lie in someone else's bed.
Churchmen. this is Ellie Sturton, this year's Arts News Coordinator and co-producer of CFRC Live Sessions and Release Radar Reels on Instagram. CFRC is thrilled to amplify local artists and musicians on our airwaves and social media, and to provide opportunities for them to get the word out about upcoming local concerts and events. Local really does live here at CFRC. Help us keep the magic going by making a donation to the station today via CFRC.ca. And thank you for your support.
Thousands of opinions are at our fingertips, but are all opinions informed? Does your information have a source? Is your social feed based on fact? Only facts can uncover the truth. Professional journalists are committed to balanced and nonpartisan reporting, to independent commentary. They cut through the spin to give you the information and perspective you need. Journalism is essential to democracy, a watchdog over the powerful, an independent voice. Journalism is more important than ever.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Revolving Door on CFR.